and welcome back to the Palace Way podcast. We're doing a little bit of a micro episode today. It's myself and Alex Jones to give you all you want to hear about post Millwall. I've just gotten back. It's a pretty good day to be a Crystal Palace fan. Alex, how are you doing?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Football in the sunshine, a nice resounding win over your South London rivals. Bit of shithousery on Twitter as well, lots going on there. They're just showing the worst of themselves at the moment. But yeah, very, very good day. I wasn't on iPlayer, I was in the pub in Chorlton, just on the edge of Manchester. Very pretty place if you get the chance to go. It's been a few episodes now since I've shoehorned the fact that I live there in, so I'm very proud of that one. But yeah, all in all, a very, very good day to be a Crystal Palace fan indeed.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a glaring sort of topic to start with. And that's the Jean-Philippe Mateta incident with the Millwall goalkeeper. In the ground, I was kind of having a conversation with the guy next to me, and I heard the crowd like doing the go-on for Mateta, and I just turned my head and I see him get absolutely clattered. But I didn't think he'd made contact at first. I thought the ball had hit him and he just hit the deck, and then I saw the replays on Twitter and it's genuinely horrible. Obviously, Steve Parish at halftime called it one of the worst. He said he'd basically never seen a challenge that bad in his life. What would you make of that claim?
Spot on. I mean, we could rattle on adjectives all day, but there's quite a few I could use. Disgraceful, disgusting, reckless, brain dead, stupid. You could apply these to Millwall fans. You could apply them to the incident itself. Honestly, I echo Parish's sentiment completely. I echo Glasner's sentiment too. Absolutely the lowest of the low from Liam Roberts. I don't condone any abuse or anything of that sort, but he should be deeply ashamed of himself as a professional footballer. I think at any level, at Sunday League right through to Premier League, whichever level you're looking at, that is horrible. It's something you just don't even conceive of doing. I don't think it's just an accident. It was a needless challenge. It was deliberate in terms of its ability to deny the striker. I think it was deeply cynical and has no place in our sport. I was absolutely outraged when I saw the replay back. In your defence, Bruno, in real time, I think you were sat in the Arthur, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I admit it was probably quite hard in the stadium to see the impact of that. So I'm glad you've had a chance to look back. I mean, in real time, it happens also quickly. You know, accidents do happen in football, but this was everything. This was a cynical, needless run off the line. This was a high boot in a dangerous area and a dangerous part of the body. It looks like Mateta's going to have stitches in his ear. He's definitely going to miss the next game against Ipswich, from what Glasner said. He may be out a little bit longer too, but we'll have to wait and see. But hopefully he should be back from the quarterfinals, and that's Glasner's words, not mine. So I think on a more positive note, or at least a more Palace-focused note, I think just on behalf of yourself, myself, everyone at the Palace Way, I think, you know, we're all just wishing JP a speedy recovery. He put out a nice message on Instagram to say he's okay and we'll come back stronger too. And yeah, it looks like it won't be too serious. It wouldn't surprise me if he needs to have minor surgery or stitches personally, but it sounds like it's not going to be like a season derailer or anything too serious. So he's in decent health and it looks like Nketiah will be stepping up to the mantle.
Yeah, I think it's important to note how lucky he is, because with the speed, the height, the contact, it could have been so much worse than what it appears to be shaping out to look like. And I think it's just honestly a bit of a miracle, both on a personal perspective and from a Palace perspective, because let's not beat around the bush. He's probably our best player and has been our best player for over a year now. Just this morning, we saw pieces coming out about what Crystal Palace could sell him for, 50, 60 mil. And that kind of all fell apart in a moment, at least until we realised he wasn't completely out cold. But I was having flashbacks to the Raul Jimenez head injury, the Ryan Mason head injury, and sort of standing there very, very disturbed on the sidelines. But it's good to know that he's made it. I guess there was a lot of talk about the referee, whether or not he should have given the red originally or if he was just holding out for VAR. Alex, what did you kind of make of that?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I don't usually agree with Troy Deeney. I think he's a bit of a buck, to be brutally honest. But I think he made a good point on Match of the Day, which is in that I think it's easy to fall back as a referee, and I kind of understand the benefit of doing so. I actually think if there wasn't VAR, I think he would have given it as a red, to be honest. I think Michael Oliver is, let's stick up a bit here, one of the best referees we have in the country. Do I think he should have just given it as a red anyway? Yes, of course I do. Like, it was obviously a red, but as I said earlier, it all happened so fast in real time, and there's so much as a referee to be scanning around for. So don't get me wrong, I'm very much of the opinion he should have given it a red first, but when you've got VAR there, you might as well use it. I don't think it's ideal. I don't think it's ideal at all, but I still think the main thing is that we got the right decision. That's more important for me. If we have to use technology and delay it, we get the minutes added on, it's okay. So I'm not that fussed about, should he have gone, should he have not? We all know how bad it was. The referee recognized how bad it was, and the correct decision was made. I don't think he would have given that or let it slide for, sorry, I should say, if he hadn't had VAR there. I think he would have ultimately come to the right decision.
And speaking of clarity and how obvious it was as a decision, I've just been sent a tweet by everyone's favourite former footballer, Joey Barton, and I'd like to read out what it says.
Oh, Christ, right, here we go.
I think it's a foul by Mateta initially on the defender. The keeper gets the ball and momentum takes him into the man. Play on or free kick to the keeper, in my opinion, never a red. Mateta has a cut to his head. Play on. It's a contact sport.
Of course, a wife beater would say it's a contact sport, play on. Yeah, what a prick. It's like bait, and I don't think we should cut that. I don't think there's anything controversial about that. That's brain dead. But I think he knows what we're doing. I think we've probably taken the bait a little bit there. I think it's deliberately controversial. It's not a foul from Mateta. He's entitled to make the run in behind. The keeper's rushed out. He's got three centre halves, or sorry, three defenders, I should say, just flanking him, tracking back. This isn't like a all or nothing challenge. It's completely needless from Liam Roberts. So, I'm not asked about what Jerry Barton thinks, because no one's asked about what Jerry Barton thinks. He's a Muppet, right? And everyone knows that. So, is it a foul from Mateta? Come on, come on. Show some IQ points, mate.
I find it interesting the way that JP tends to get involved in these kind of moments. I guess I worry a little bit, even if he's physically okay, that there might be some psychological impact due to just having a clattering like that and needing to go to hospital. It's quite a experience, pretty heavy experience for a young guy. Obviously he's a professional athlete, he's got that mentality, but we've seen footballers have a nasty clash and then be more hesitant to cause problems in the box, and given that that's his brand, I can just hope he recovers from it. But in the meantime, obviously we'll have Eddie Nketiah starting up top, so for at least one game being Ipswich before the international break and potentially during that tour in Marbella as well. And he did all right today. He did all right.
Yeah, definitely. No issues with that performance at all. I mean, just looking at the stats, it's his actual first time in his Palace career. I've got obviously that he's scored in back-to-back games, and the first time in his career that he's done so since 2022. So, okay, he's not been the most consistent over time, but this is a man who looks rejuvenated. I mean, we saw it against Villa. Obviously, that goal did him a wonder of confidence at the end. And okay, it was the end, but I think from start to finish today, when he came on, he looked much more sharp, more energized. The crowd was behind him and not sort of apathetic about him. Let's just park the goal chat from today for later. Let's just look at his overall body language, his physicality. He looked very, very sharp, and he looked twice the player that we've seen in recent games. So for me, is it ideal? No, but this Nketiah purchase for 30 million is a long-term project. This isn't a short-term stopgap thing. He's someone who we see is developing a little bit more over time, but also has enough experience to contribute meaningfully. And in this sort of interim period where Mateta's out for probably just a game or two, then it's absolutely fine to give Nketiah that run at game. So no, I was quite enhanced by his performance, and not only was I entranced by it, I think I'm really positive going ahead for this next run of games without Mateta.
Yeah, he's quite a unique profile for a striker. My friend Zach, who I was sitting next to, was like, "Have you ever seen a striker as short as Eddie Nketiah?" And I'll tell you who he reminds me of, and that's Jermaine Defoe. He's got that improvisational finishing ability. He doesn't mind making a run and shooting from the wider areas of the box. Good on the volley, and has a surprisingly good header in him. And what a goal it was! Because, and it's not the first time we've seen him do that. He pulled out a very nice header away at Arsenal in the Carabao Cup. But to get that power and accuracy from that distance is very, very impressive for a man of his stature.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you took the words right out of my mouth, actually, because that was going to be my next point. He's surprisingly aerial for someone. I think he's what, 5'9"? I don't know every player's height off by heart, but
It's
he's
give or take in
I'm
that range.
yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, I'm 5'6" for context, so I'm an absolute midget. I think I'm the only one on the show that is a short ass. So, Bruno, who's for benefit of the listeners, just mouthed at me 5-6 and then did a sort of pipe down gesture. I'm keeping that on record because you get the point. Quite funny. Anyway, I know Snow White, I know all her mates, all that jazz, blah 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 blah. Let's get the jokes out there. So yeah, Nketiah, couple of headed goals, surprisingly physical as you say, good on the volley. I think what was just missing from his game is confidence, and maybe I'm overplaying this, but his body language, like I keep saying, just looked different. He was making runs with more confidence in where he was going. He was communicating more effectively with his teammates, and above all, he was sharper. He was more instinctive. He didn't second guess himself or doubt himself. And I think in JP's early career, when he was struggling for goals, I think he did that, where he was always more rash in his decision making and didn't necessarily take things first time when he could have. And once he stopped thinking less and doing more in terms of first touches, in terms of first shots, we saw the best out of him. So, as I said in my previous point, Nketiah is not the JP replacement until Mateta's gone. At the moment, he's a long-term project. He's depth, he's cover, he's someone who will develop and grow into the mold over time. And in a couple of years, could be our number one striker. But yeah, we could spend all day talking about the goal, we could talk about him, but the fact is, for these next couple of games, he's our striker. So let's just get behind him. It was a really, really good game for him, made up for his recent success, as the whole squad were in the last game against Villa. And now he's got his chance to prove himself.
Yeah, I think with Nketiah, it's so important to remember that this is a striker that Dougie Friedman chased for years. He is a unique profile and certainly not a like-for-like player in Mateta's place physically, but he's got a quality that we're otherwise missing. And I know we haven't seen much of it thus far, and his touches seem loose at times. But when he first arrived at the club, he was a complete breath of fresh air in training. Glasner was pretty impressed by, his work rate. He scored multiple goals actually in the first friendly he played behind closed doors. So, he ha is clearly capable of making that impact. Confidence, I think you're right, has played a big role. He still has these little weaknesses in his games that he needs to iron out. I think his passing is quite weak, especially when with his back to goal. But he's very good at running in behind. We've already seen him be quite effective in those positions, and he's actually quite quick. He's quicker than I realised. There was a moment in the first half when the ball was played through to him and he skinned Tanganga. And I don't know, there were just a lot of optimistic signs from him. And it'll be pretty exciting to see him start against Ipswich's centre backs, who aren't particularly dominant. And I think that gives him a chance to do more in the Premier League and further cement himself as a good player. Yes, we probably overpaid for him. I doubt we'll sell him for more than we bought him for, but at this stage in his career, if he goes on to see out his contract and be this player for us, I think that's overall a good signing. So only time will tell, but I'm actually looking forward to seeing how he gets on against Ipswich and how he builds on a good performance today. But I want to move on to a couple of other things from the performance. Ben Chilwell obviously made his first start for us. I think he did really well. He's maybe my man of the match, actually. I think he's come in, looked solid defensively, looked very good on the ball, and very nearly scored a screamer, albeit offside.
No, definitely. I mean, he had a few big opportunities and his work rate was phenomenal down the left. His offensive build-up was particularly good to see and something that was a breath of fresh air from Tyrick Mitchell. Not that the latter's been bad, but I think it was still really encouraging. As you say, there was a really, really big chance whereby Lucas Jensen was forced in. So I have to say, a very, very good save. Just got down instinctively with his right foot and just plays it out. I mean, it was really, really unlucky for Palace. Chilwell, again, few big chances. I think he hits the bar, doesn't he, at one point. It was just non-stop energy, non-stop running. He drew some homophobic chants from the Millwall fans as well, which I find pretty on brand for them too. So, as much as those are ugly scenes, I think Chilwell himself had a really, really good game and absolutely tore their other side to shreds.
Yeah, the guy behind me in the Arthur Wake basically said, "You don't see Mitchell doing that," when he swiveled with the ball in the air and hit it very cleanly onto the bar. And I think that's just true. Chilwell has an undeniable quality, and you could see it throughout the game. His willingness to make runs in behind, he demonstrated pace. The quality of his cross is good. The way he strikes the ball is just more clean than we've seen from Mitchell. Obviously, he missed that chance at Aston Villa, and I think it's the kind of chance that you'd see Chilwell probably score. So that's what you're getting with him. He's a seasoned professional. He's a Champions League winner, and today marks his first full 90 in over a year. So it's a good achievement for him to hit that milestone. And I was obviously very critical of the signing when he came in. I thought it was very risky to abandon a 19-year-old or a 20-year-old guy we've been tracking for a while, who was our permanent plan, to go for someone with a lengthy injury record. But so far, it looks like he can be a good player for us. And if he can provide that alternative to Tyrone Mitchell, it could be a cornerstone for an end of the season run akin to last season, provided everything comes together, everyone stays fit, and we see Mateta come back as soon as possible.
Yeah, just looking ahead, I mean, I don't want to gloss over everything about Millwall, but I think it's just good to talk about the run we've got coming up briefly. I mean, you mentioned it on the last episode, Ipswich, Southampton, Brighton, you know, these are must-win games, as we've said, but, you know, this is only one part of a season-defining run we've got. If we want to be serious about Europe, it's important we beat the likes of Fulham, Brighton, and Villa, and then we don't drop points against these two games. But if you slip up anywhere, there are, what, five teams, six teams that are ready to flood in the race for Europe. You know, eighth is Europe.
Yeah, I think we've got to get realistic about Europe. We've fumbled too many big games to Brentford and Everton this season for us to really consider having a go at Europe. I hear all this excitement and I can't fully get behind it, because with Palace, there's no way we're breaking ninth. I don't know. I don't see this season being the season. It's been too stacked against us from the start, with the international lethargy and the injuries and the departures and the poor business. I think it could have been the year, but we kind of fucked it and we had some bad luck, and now everything's clicking, but it's going to be similar to last season. We'll just maybe be a little bit higher, but the run won't be quite as good. Like, I don't know, I don't want to like shut down the Europe train, but we're what, 11th, 12th?
Yeah, tough.
Yeah, it's not exactly the beginnings of a charge. We've got big games coming up. Ipswich is a must win. Southampton's a must win. Brighton is a complete must win, at Selhurst Park. And we've not been the best at home this season either. So it feels like every time we play at Selhurst, we concede at least one bullshit goal. Today, a great example of that. Munoz gets skinned by a championship winger, and Matt Turner just deflects it in the into the direction of whoever it was running in, and that's something we really need to iron out. On the whole, I thought the back three was all right today. I don't know what you made of them. I thought Lacroix was probably the best, but they also really struggled to play into midfield, especially in that second half. There was a kind of, I don't know if it was exhaustion or a boredom or a strange force that slowed down the way we were playing at the start of that second half. But I noticed Mark Gay and Glasner in particular were completely infuriated by the way we were playing.
Yeah, it was complacency. That's the word I'd use. I was saying it to the guy in the pub next to me. We were all just astounded by the sort of change in tempo. I think we were very, very nippy in our passing and offensive play in that first half. And, you know, we looked a constant threat. Whereas in the second half, it's like we were just pedestrian in the way we passed it around, in the way we didn't press as much. We just sort of sat back and were just intent on seeing it out, which really surprised me. It really isn't the way we tend to play under Glasner. And just a bit on your centre backs there, like you say, Lacroix imperious, no comments on that. Gehi, again, a bit slow at times. I think he was frustrated though as much as anything and was doing his best to try and progress play. Richards had a stinker of a first half and then a very, very good second half, I felt, where he really recovered very well from that. Although admittedly, I think he just happened to get done by Femi Aziz for their goal. So, you know, a bit of individual brilliance. It's probably a bit harsh to blame that on Chris Richards. He just gets a bit too tight there and concedes a bit too much space, which then makes it easy to allow Aziz to run in once he manages to skin him with a bit of individual trickery. So, yeah, I mean, ultimately, I don't think it was a terrible game for our centre backs, but we've seen them play better as a unit for sure.
Yeah, I think Pat will probably want to argue with me on this, but I do think it's kind of linked to how the teams we play at home line up against us. They tend to sit back into a low block. We don't have players that can really break down a low block, and when teams are countering like that, it exposes Richard's lack of pace, and going forward as well, he can't really do the support role as well as Chalobah could or Klein could. So we're less dangerous down that right-hand side when attacking against the low block. Like, that's kind of what I think the issue is with us in that second half, because they sat back and were looking to hit us on the counter and use their height and sort of inch their way up the pitch and steal something. And whilst there was complacency, we didn't really have a player that could lock them down. Saar was completely absent. Eze was completely absent. França and Essay came on and were more dangerous than the two of them were, and they weren't particularly good either. So it wasn't a good day for our wider players. Munoz obviously was excellent, but it does point to me that we're still missing someone that can unlock. You know, Eze on his best day maybe can, and Wharton obviously provides the pass before that moment. But I still think we're missing an Elise type, and obviously we won't get someone of his quality, but I don't think Romain Eze's, you know, less than 2 years away from being that player. So I don't know. I feel like we need someone who can run at someone and make something out of it rather than just do a couple of step overs on a touchline.
It goes back to one of the issues with our recruitment strategy in the summer, whereby the idea was to split the attributes for Elise between multiple players. And the good news is that Sarr has been threatening, direct, clinical, all very, very good. Obviously, the pace is phenomenal. We know this, but it's only disguising the fact that he has technical weaknesses in terms of flair as a player. That's just not the type of player he is. I'm not going to criticize him because he's been good for us objectively. He's just a different type of winger, that's all. And an Essay is, again, the opposite. Probably a bit slower, a little bit less clinical, but very, very good in terms of a flair or a technicality sense, in terms of, you know, drawing fouls, that sort of thing. But ultimately, he's never going to be the one to break through lines, unlock with a killer pass, and dribble past a bunch of people in the way that only really Elise and maybe a sort of on his day Essay can. So we have to be careful, I think, in acknowledging the weaknesses of our players as much as the strengths. And I think you've done that well there in terms of particularly Roman Essay. We just have to be aware that these players aren't going to be more than what they are, and we need to deploy them in the right situations against the right types of fullbacks.
I'd argue they already are, actually. I'd argue they've been playing more than they already are because the system is better than the sum of its parts due to Oliver Glasner's management. Like, we've seen Sarr be transformed from a direct winger that can't take on his man to someone that can make inverted runs and play a through ball. And we've seen Mateta go from someone completely unfamiliar with the concept of winning a header to being one of the most aerially dominant strikers in the Premier League. There's a magical figure leading our squad. And we've seen the growth that comes with it. So I can only hope that we build on that in the summer, because we've got a pretty good chance of maybe not Europe, but a top half finish, a proper top half finish this season. So ninth or above, which would be a first for us in the Premier League. We've got a chance at Wembley, at least, if not silverware, if you can believe that, in the FA Cup. I mean, if we were to miss out on Europe in the league, it would certainly be softened as a blow if we were to win the FA Cup and have a chance through that way. But yeah, I don't know. I think we've probably only got one season with Oliver Glasner left. He's beaten Brighton, he's beaten Millwall. Just needs a trophy to seal it off, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm slightly dreaming of silverware. We were 16 to 1 today, according to the Beeb, joint with Brighton, exact same odds to win the trophy outright. I don't think, for what it's worth, I genuinely don't think we'll win. I'd be amazed if we did. But we are 90 minutes away from matching Vieira's cup run, and that alone would be magical. I have a fun story about Jorginho and being in a hospital bed that from that day when I was there for the last one. I'll tell you that off air if I haven't already. But anyway, I digress. It would be amazing to get to Wembley. Let's look more positively. I think it'd be a phenomenal testament to Glasner's work and all of the hard foundations that have been put in place this season to get there. It's something fans are crying out for, just more ambition in cup competitions. I mean, can you remember a time where we made the quarterfinals of both cup competitions? I genuinely can't. I don't think we have. Like, that's the sort of
Certainly not
quality we're
in
talking about.
my time as a Palace fan. I'm
Yeah.
looking at the teams now that are still in the competition. Villa beat Cardiff yesterday. There's us. Preston beat Burnley 3-0. Wolves are currently beating Bournemouth on penalties. City obviously had just started playing Argyle. We'll see what that comes out to be. And then there's Newcastle, Brighton, United, Fulham, and Forest Ipswich. So there'll be at least basically everyone's Premier League opposition apart from Preston at the moment. And if Plymouth do a number on City, then that could very much tip the odds in our favour. But is there a preferable draw you see for the next round for the quarterfinals?
Personally, this is very personally, Preston. Either because it'll be either easier to beat than other teams in the competition, and if we draw them away, I don't live too far from Preston by train, so it'd be a very easy away day for me to do. So that's quite selfish, but I think even in terms of quality, yeah, definitely. It'd be good to have like opposition below us in terms of league stature. Failing that, Brighton, not only because the obvious rivalry would just add some
You
extra
play them twice in
flip.
2 weeks, though.
Yeah, we would. I'm not afraid of that though. I don't think we should be. It'd be a tasty little affair. And I think more importantly, I think tactically we know how to beat the man for man. I think the good thing about Brighton is The win earlier in the season gave me so much confidence for the home game and for any kind of other time we might play them while the two managers are the same, because it was a tactical masterclass in terms of our ability to burst on the counter and exploit individual weakness. You know, we distinctly played without possession for a reason, and we kept our shape very, very well. I would be very confident playing Brighton again in the cup, and I don't care if it's 2 or 2 weeks. I think with a bit of rotation, sure, there would have to be some tactical changes, but all in all, I don't fear them in the way I did under Roy, where we quite rightly got battered 4-1 because we were tactically, we were being led by a dinosaur, and we just got tactically undone for that. It was just a game of polar opposites in terms of philosophy and approach in a way that it's really not now. So yeah, I'd be happy with Brighton. I'd be happy with any opposition below us, and then we'll just see what happens. Like I say, as long as we get to Wembley, I mean, that would be amazing in the first instance.
Would you trade a league win over Brighton in a couple of weeks for a cup win over them to take us into the semis?
Not to get into the semis, no. The only reason being, I think we're much more likely to get Europe through the league than the cup. And I still think we're an outside shout for Europe. I still think we're an outside shout for Europe.
You really think that's
I think just with the quality of teams in the cup at the moment, I still think we've got more chance of progressing through the league than the cup. I genuinely think there are only a few teams that we really struggle to beat in regular games, and I have to admit. So we've got a semi, we have a final, we have a quarter final.
Like, let me put it this way, we're 10 games from Europe and we'd have to win most of them in the Premier League with three
True.
games from Europe in the FA Cup, and the opposition
But you get a draw, you get a
play
draw against City, and
killer.
that's it. Curtains, you know? Or you know, Newcastle, or probably could beat Newcastle, couldn't we?
We've beat
There's a def my point is there's well, we might do it a little bit. There's a few teams left where I'm not confident man for man over 90 or 120 minutes or whatever it is that we win. I'm thinking teams like, I think there's a high probability as we get towards the sort of semis, particularly that we draw a team like City, who maybe we do okay with in normal time, but either way, we'll probably come unstuck if you're a betting person or you look at the odds. Now, with Glasner, never tell me the odds, but I still really believe that our league form is imperious, and I think the way we're playing makes me feel like we could beat most of the teams around us. If we get 9 points, like 9 points against Ipswich, Southampton, and Brighton, you're going to assume that the likes of Villa and Fulham drop more. You're going to assume that the teams that are even more challenging in terms of Chelsea and you know, traditional top six sides, traditional challenges, they're also going to drop points at some point because they're just not as cohesive and well drilled and consistent in a way that we are. I'm genuinely optimistic about the league that we could scrape eighth. We've just got to make sure we win the white games and really go for it. I think, you know, the jeopardy of knockout football is simply too much. There's too little in terms of the spread of results required in order to succeed. I think we're not going to really see eye to eye on this one, but I still think really that the league is a priority, but I still want to give a cup run everything we've got. And certainly in terms of squad depth and rotation, I want to see our strongest 11s in the cup and not the league.
I think that's probably fair. I guess I just think we're still going to play City, Newcastle, and City, Newcastle, and Brighton in the league before the season is out. So what's the difference between the league and the cup that way? Like, realistically, if we lost all three of those games in the Premier League, we're done. And
Well, certainly, I think Brighton, we probably won't. I think, but you're right. Hypothetically, if we lost all three, we'd be relying on favours elsewhere, really, and trying to pick up back form again. So I do think if there's a lot of jeopardy and a lot of outside chance for both. I'm not going to pretend that one is easier than the other by a great deal. They're both very difficult ways to win or to achieve Europe in some form. But, you know, Pat's right. Eighth is enough. We've got, you know, a good run of games coming up, and we've started that run really, really well. We just need to keep that going. And I think, you know, we've got the depth now to finally achieve it. Players are coming back. I think there's plenty of reason to be optimistic in both competitions. So, really, really interested to see where those ones go.
I'm going to close off this episode with a question for you, which is, where do you think we'll finish in the Premier League?
Very, very good question. If I'm going to say 10th, that's my instinct. I don't think we'll get Europe. I think we're an outside chance for Europe. I think if we sustain this form, we'll get Europe. I think we'll be good enough to get eighth if we could just win every week against the teams that we should be beating and rely on a few drop points here and there, which will inevitably will happen both for us and for other teams. So I don't think it's as outlandish to say that. I just think odds are, I think things will probably go against us rather than for us. We'll probably lose a freak game here and there. We might lose to Brighton, who knows? I think we're probably just going to have to drop points in some instances, and that will cost us eventually. But I think we'll get 10th with our best ever points tally. I think we'll set that as a record. I'm quite confident on that. I think the way we've been playing, the cohesiveness, the understanding, it's probably one of the best squads we've ever had, and certainly one of the best managers we've ever had in the Premier League. So No debate in my mind. I think that we were getting into the top half. I think we've overcome the shackles of the past, but I think with too little depth too late and too little cohesion too late, I think it's ultimately cost us the promised land, as it were. And I don't think it's the promised land, but it is the promised land if you want to go by fan opinion.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Honestly, if we break the glass ceiling of 50 points, that's one step to breaking the glass ceiling of top nine or even Europe. So it's a step in the right direction. We'll have the stand coming soon enough. Transfer improvements in the summer.
Soon enough.
Yeah,
Thanks lots of it.
there's forward momentum. It's just comparatively slower than a lot of the other teams. And that's a depressing factor as a Palace fan. But at the end of the day, South London is ours. Millwall are shit. We beat Brighton. We'll hopefully beat them again. We've got a cup run going. We could still challenge for Europe in the Premier League. Times are good. Thank you, Alex, for coming on at such short notice. I hope you all enjoyed this rather short form version of the Palace Way podcast. Let us know if you'd like to see more of this style of content in the future. Be sure to check out our website. Follow us on Twitter if you don't already. That's thepalaceway.com and at thepalaceway. But for now, that's all from us. Have a wonderful rest of your afternoon. Be loud, be proud, be Palace.